Gold Coast, there are innumerable small artificial havens, which have been constructed by the herring fishermen for the accommodation of their shallow craft. And again, on many of the islands, the only harbours are those affording shelter to the ferry boats which ply to the mainland, harbours, as a rule, having no more than 3 feet of water. Therefore, small yachts only can visit these out-of-the-way spots. A cruise among the islands affords some of the fascination of a voyage of discovery. At many of them, seagoing vessels never call. And as all the English yachts that enter the Baltic are of considerable tonnage, the English yachtsman knows but little of the charms of the best cruising ground in Europe. The Baltic is a treacherous sea. Settled weather can never be dependent on. Gales spring up very unexpectedly, and a nasty sea rises quickly on its shallow waters. But a little yacht, following the coast, has nearly always some snug harbour to run for, should bad weather come on, whereas a larger craft with deeper draught must needs stand out to sea and make the best of it she can. The small yacht is certainly the one for the Baltic, but to get her there is a somewhat difficult task. To arrive at the mouth of the River Ida, whence the Baltic can be reached by canal, involves a voyage across the North Sea and a lengthy cruise along the coast of Holland and Germany. Unless the yachtsman has exceptional luck with his weather, this journey is likely to cause him a considerable amount of anxiety. For the east coast of the North Sea, with its dangerous shoals, tumbling seas, and lack of harbours to run for, is certainly the last the skipper of a small yacht would select for a pleasure cruise. But once let him reach the mouth of the Ida, and he will be more than compensated for his preliminary difficulties and hardships. The yacht at Hammersmith possessed two qualities not usually found together. She was a very light draught, and yet she was an excellent sea boat. She drew something under 3 feet, and so could enter the shallowest Danish boat harbour. With her, if I saw a port before me, I could run in boldly, not needing a pilot, and without troubling my head about the depth of water. For where any other boat had gone before, mine was able to follow. She also looked like a craft that would put up with a great deal of heavy weather, and could be trusted to carry one safely across the North Sea. I saw that she was, in short, the very vessel I required, so I came to terms with her owner, and soon found that I had no reason to be disappointed with my bargain. The Falcon, for so I named her after my former vessel, was an old P&O lifeboat, and had doubtless made many a voyage to India and back on a steamer's deck. As is the way with lifeboats, her bow and stern were alike, and she had far more sheer than is ever given to a yacht. She had been built in the strongest manner by the well-known lifeboat builder, White, of Cowes. She was double-skinned, both skins being of the best teak, the outer of horizontal, the inner of diagonal planking. The gentleman from whom I bought her had converted her into a yawl, or to be more correct, a ketch, for her mizzenmast was well inboard, so that her mainsail was smaller and her mizzen larger than is the case with yawls, an advantage as far as handiness is concerned. The watertight compartments had been taken out of her, a false keel had been fastened on, and she had been decked all over with the exception of a small well. There was no appliance for covering over this well in bad weather, but I have never seen a pint of water tumble into it, so buoyant and admirable a sea boat did the little vessel prove to be. The Falcon is jury-rigged, too much so indeed, her spars and sails being rather too small. Her mainmast lowers on a tabernacle, a system which I do not like for sea work, but which proved useful on the Norfolk Broads. She is 29 feet.